Seems like this is a recurring thing in my mind, and I hope that that's of the Lord, because I think there is some urgency to it when we consider the state that our nation is in. If I did not watch the presidential debate, but I have seen highlights of it, clips of it. And I think for anybody that is a child of God that is serious about spiritual matters, there is a part of you that feels maybe a little unsettled when you see the direction our country is going, which is very understandable. We have to keep in mind that the Lord has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind, and that this is nothing new. From very early on in the Bible, you see a cycle that nations and civilizations go through, and the Bible talks about as a dog returns to her to its vomit, and as a washed sow goes back to the mud, our human nature will take us back towards the things that are not good for us. And that's just a fallen, corrupt nature. And hearing a lot of commentary today on, you know, remembering September 11th and things like that, and how shortly after September 11th, people were very serious about the Lord and serious about church. And we have, you know, 20-something years later, we're probably further from the Lord now than we were before September 11th. That's just nations and civilizations' tendencies to do that. And so from a spiritual perspective, it can be very unsettling at times. I try not to worry about it. I try not to be fearful about it. But I really wouldn't be human if I did not think about, where are we going to be in 5 years or 10 years? The Bible is clear that things are not going to get better, that evil men inducers will wax worse and worse, the Bible tells us. So we're on a downhill slope. Now, there may be moments of revival along the way, but we're on a downhill slope as a nation and as a world, and that's what the Bible tells us is going to happen. But it does make you wonder, what type of nation will my children live in? What will the churches be like, and all this type of thing? And so Brother Josh Coker, maybe a year or two ago, I believe he came and preached our meeting, and he made a statement that really stuck with me. He said something to the effect of, we might need to, as God's people, instead of trying to change what is around us, we might need to start learning to live in Babylon. And for you young people that may not be as well versed in the Bible, which we'll see here in just a minute, Babylon was a nation that came and overtook the Israelites. They came and defeated them, destroyed them, killed many of them, and took them into captivity and made them live amongst, you know, the Babylonian laws and the rules, and they had a major influence on them, and everything that the Israelites knew as far as culture and the way they worshiped the Lord and all those things, those were gone and put aside because they had been taken captive by another nation. And he said, you know, instead of trying to reform Israel, he said, we may need to start learning to live in Babylon, saying that we're on a downhill slope and we need to maybe prepare ourselves that the freedoms that we experience as Christians today, we may not have those freedoms in the future. And as I thought more and more about that, a verse came to my mind that I haven't read in quite some time, but it's one that I tried to memorize years and years ago, and for some reason it popped into my mind. And it brought me a lot of comfort considering where we are as a nation, and it said, and the path that we're on, and it's in the 16th chapter of Proverbs, verse 7. And it says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. And I thought, you know, that's a profound thing. That's a wonderful thing that the Lord does for us. I don't know if you've ever tried to make peace with your enemy. It's not an easy thing to do. I have people that do not like me, and they don't really have a reason they don't like me. They just don't like me, you know. And you know, I guess there's people that I'm just not quite as fond of either. Just human nature. You don't have a good reason, but I'm just not really drawn to you. That's a fleshy thing. But if you've ever had somebody that's your enemy that feels like you are set against them and they're set against you, have you ever tried to make peace with them? It's not the easiest thing to do, but the Bible tells us the Lord has a way of taking somebody that is against you, who is your enemy, and he has a way of making peace between that enemy and you. Now, I don't fully understand how he does that, but it's comforting to me to know if I find myself living in a so-called Babylon one day where a nation or a society maybe just changes around us to where God is no longer welcome. He is not something that is glorified and worshiped. He's looked at as maybe a false god, and his teachings are, and we've already seen this, his teachings are qualified as hate speech. It's comforting to me to know that if I find myself or you or my children living in a Babylon, that even though I don't understand fully how that will play out, that the Lord has a way of making people that please him, when their ways please him, he has a way of bringing peace to that situation. Now, in the book of Daniel, you see this very scenario played out. And in the book of Daniel, just to lay a little bit of groundwork, the Israelites are a free people. They have their own king. They are observing to some degree the Mosaic law that was given to them that you can read about in the Old Testament. And because of their rebellion, the Lord says, I'm handing you over to a nation. Now, you have rebelled against me so long that I'm just going to step back, remove my hedge of protection, and another nation is going to come in here, and they're going to wipe you out and take many of you captive. Now, you can read some of the history about that, but that exile, if you will, that removing of people from Israel into Babylon happened in three different waves. They went and got some, you know, they went and got some of them out of there. Then they went back a little later and they got some more. And then the final siege came and they got even more. So there was three different times that people were exiled over into Babylon. The first time that happened, Daniel was one of the ones that was taken away from his homeland into Babylon. Now, the Babylonian nation, it was a nation that they had high regard for science and philosophy and history and astrology and things like that. And so the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, he instructs them, when you bring people out of Israel and you're going to make them our captives, he said, I want you to look for young men that seem to be intelligent, well put together, and physically, and we're going to take them and we're going to use them and train them, and they will be to the benefit of the Babylonian nation. And so that was somewhat of Nebuchadnezzar's plan. Now, if you read in the book of Daniel, I'll just start in verse 1. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And he spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel. That certain there are the ones that he thought had potential. Bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. He says, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Now, it says here in the fifth verse, and the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Okay, so in this exile, in this captivity, he says, I want you to look for children who there's no blemish, they're well-favored, they're skillful in wisdom, they're cunning in knowledge and understanding science. And he said, I want you to find all of those people and bring them to me. And he said, I'm going to put them in a 3-year program. What does this sound like if I tell you this? I want you to put them in a 3-year program, and I want you to indoctrinate them with something other than what they've been taught their whole life. Sounds a whole lot like college, doesn't it? Sounds a whole lot like going off to a college somewhere, and they get 4 years, and a lot of times they try to train you and indoctrinate you on things that are foreign to a godly upbringing. Isn't it interesting how there's really nothing missing out of God's word? You want to know how to handle going off to college? Here's your example. Daniel and his 3 companions, which was Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and Daniel, those 4 are brought into a 3-year program where they're going to try to indoctrinate them. Now, the first thing that they do to try to change their identity and take them to a place where they're able to leave behind everything they've ever been taught was to change their names. And so names don't, you know, we don't really go at naming our children maybe like they used to. You know, used to, they would give you a name based on what that name meant. Now we just kind of name kids because we kind of like the way it sounds, you know. And some people may put more thought into it than that, but we really didn't. We just said, we like the name Emma, let's go with Emma, you know. So they changed their names. All right, Daniel means God is my judge. They changed Daniel's name to Belteshazzar, which means Baal will protect. Hananiah's name means Jehovah is gracious, and they changed his name to Shadrach, which means Aku, which was a Babylonian false god. Aku inspires. Mishael means who is like God, and they changed his name to Meshach, which means belongs to Aku. And then Azariah means Jehovah helps, and they changed his name to Abednego, which means servant of Nebo. All right, so imagine you're one of these 4 boys. Now, we read this story, and it doesn't necessarily really prick us too much. Okay, but understand this. These 4 young men were taken away from their family, not willingly. They were taken by force from their family, from their land, from their routine, from their language, from their diet. From everything that they knew was normal, they are taken into a faraway country. That's got to make you heartsick if you're experiencing that. I have lost my freedoms, and I've been brought to this place, and I had to leave so much behind. There had to be heartache with these young men. And then they find themselves, if you'll let me paint it this way, then they find themselves sitting in a classroom. And the teacher says, okay, Daniel, you're not going to be called Daniel anymore. When I call on you to answer a question, I'm going to refer to you as Belteshazzar. How that must have stung him a little bit to me to think, my name no longer means God is my judge. Now they're calling me something that says a false god, Baal, will protect. That had to sting a little bit. When they started learning language, the different language of the Babylonians and the Chaldeans and all those types of things, that had to be a depressing time. Just imagine if that were you or one of your children. If all of a sudden another nation comes, and let's just take Hank and Jack, and they take Hank and Jack away from me, away from their home. Hank and Jack are taken to another country. They change their names. They put them in front of people that try to teach them a different language and different customs, and basically tell them everything you've ever been taught about God and religion, you need to forget it and put it away. All right, can you imagine how Tiffany and I would feel? But can you imagine how Jack and Hank would feel? It'd be awful. But that's where Daniel and his 3 companions find themselves. Now, this world is constructed of 2 kingdoms. There's the kingdom of God, and there's the kingdom of the world, and they are always in conflict with one another. Always. You never find those two kingdoms in harmony. There will always be conflict. So the question is, when we find ourselves living in Babylon, when we find ourselves in a time where certain outward expressions of religion and honor towards God are not allowed, the question is, how does a child of God comply with a nation that has that set up without compromising what they believe and who they are as God's child? Well, the Lord gave us this picture in the book of Daniel. Now, it starts out here and it says, the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat. That's important, not just any meat, of the king's meat. And of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now, let me flip over and read this verse to you when we're talking about the king's meat here. These four Hebrew young men have found themselves before a Babylonian king. And he says, for 3 years you're going to be given instruction, and for 3 years you're going to eat a certain diet. Now, this is the Babylonians now. They don't have the Mosaic law that had all the dietary laws in it. They just ate whatever. And in Proverbs, the 23rd chapter, it says, when thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Now we read over in Daniel here, where Daniel finds himself sitting before the ruler and being offered what the Proverbs referred to as dainties or meat. And it says, you'll be better off to put a knife to your throat and take your own life than you would be to give in to this ruler's meat, this king's meat, because it's deceitful. Now, there's a picture and imagery there, obviously. And among those three, the Bible says, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Again, renamed them, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah of Shadrach, and Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. And it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself, because Daniel was given a law as a Hebrew. There were certain things he was not to eat. So Daniel is faced with a situation: if I comply, I also compromise. If I comply to the world I'm living in, I compromise the very laws and the path that the Lord has given me. And so Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, let's say that you're the prince of the eunuchs, and you've got these Hebrew boys standing in front of you who you saw that they were in captivity, so they were slaves. You saw as being lesser than you, and you having more authority and power than they did, and they were just a small thing. And if you don't work out, we'll just kill you. There's more Hebrew boys that are full of wisdom and cunning and all that kind of cunning and knowledge, and we can bring them in. How do you think the prince of the eunuchs felt when Daniel said, as for me and my three buddies here, we don't want to eat the king's meat, and we don't want to drink the king's wine? You would think the proper response would be, you'll drink what I tell you to, slave, and you'll eat what I tell you to, slave, because I'm in charge of carrying out the king's orders. And if you don't eat these things, and we go before the king, and you four boys look scrawnier and unhealthier than all the rest of these that have been eating what they're supposed to eat, it's going to be my head on a platter. That's the logical response. But what did I read at the very beginning? When a man's ways please the Lord, He maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. And it tells us in verse 9, it says, now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Daniel did not bring Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. God did that. In some way that I don't fully understand, when the prince of the eunuch looked on Daniel, there was something that came to this eunuch's mind that looked at Daniel and had a tenderness for him, compassion for him, and just liked him. Because God did that. Because Daniel had purposed in his heart that he wouldn't defile himself. I wonder how it would have read if it would have said, and Daniel was afraid for his life and for his friend's life, so he thought he would eat the king's meat anyway. I wonder if he would have, if that unit would have had the same outlook and perception of Daniel. I doubt it. And it says, and the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are your sword? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. You see, we just talked about that. That's the typical response. Why should I do this? I'm just putting my neck on the line. And so Daniel, in a meek, humble, very wise way, says to him, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Give us 10 days. Let them give us pulse, which are vegetables, to eat, and water to drink. I don't want the king's meat and the king's wine. Give us vegetables and water. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. Now, I think the Lord is in this too. I'm not a dietitian, but I don't know. If I started eating vegetables and water today, and I set the oatmeal cream pies aside, and I set the pizza aside, and the hamburgers aside, I doubt in 10 days I would look really any different to you. Some of you might notice that I probably looked hungry, but I don't think you'd say, boy, his physique, and he's just glowing. I think the Lord was in that, because 10 days is not a long time. But in 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Now, the Bible says in 1 Samuel, the Lord says, them that honor me, I will honor. Daniel is a captive. He is no longer living in home. He's living in Babylon. But somehow in the midst of this city that did not welcome the religion of the Hebrews, somehow in the midst of this city, he has not compromised. He has been able to continue living under the law of God. And he has proven to the prince of these eunuchs that there's something to the God of the Hebrews. Again, in the midst of Babylon. It goes on and it says, as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding and all visions and dreams. If you will read on, Daniel, the Lord gives, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, very briefly here. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream and he can't forget it. There's probably some weird meaning to that. Dreams are unusual, but Nebuchadnezzar doesn't go and say, hey, I had a dream, this crazy dream. I need somebody to tell me what it means. He says, I had this crazy dream, and I don't even remember what it was. So not only do I need somebody to tell me what it is, what it means, I need somebody to tell me what the dream actually was. And then once you tell me what the dream actually was, tell me what it means. And he says, if you don't, I'm going to kill all the wise men. Well, Daniel gets word of it, and he says, give me a little time, and he begins to pray. And the Lord reveals the dream to him and what it means, and he goes and tells Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar exalts Daniel to a very high-ranking official, very high-ranking position. Now, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. How do you take a Hebrew boy, slave and captive, and the next thing you know, he is a high-ranking official in a foreign, ungodly nation? Only God can do that. For the sake of time here, let me give you this part here. Many years go by, and the Medes and the Persians come in and attack Babylon, and they overthrow Babylon and basically take over. So now Nebuchadnezzar has died. I believe it was his son or grandson. Belshazzar is on the throne when the Medes and Persians come in and attack. And so the Medes and Persians come in and take over. Okay, and Darius is the king of the Medes and Persians. So now Darius is sitting in as king, still over this essentially the same nation with just different ungodly rulers. And Daniel is still beginning to prosper. But now at this time, Daniel's no longer a young man. Daniel's about 80 years old. And so you can read about some of this in the sixth chapter of Daniel. And it says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. So he's somewhat restructuring the government of this land that he's just taken over. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. So out of 120 presidents is what they call them, Daniel was number one. He was ranked number one. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Okay, so again, from a young Hebrew boy, Daniel's ways pleased the Lord, and he found favor with his enemies. Daniel's not our only example. Go back some time and read through Genesis about Joseph. Joseph sold into slavery and finds himself the number two man in Egypt, a great, powerful nation. How did that happen? Same way it happened with Daniel. When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. So an 80-year-old Daniel is sitting under Darius, and he is over the whole realm. Well, at this point, there is scandal and some conspiracy brewing in all the other presidents because they're jealous. Daniel's ranked number one, and we're jealous. So they try to catch him in something that they can take before the king to bring him down some rate. Oh, Daniel did this, Daniel did that. He can't be set over the whole realm. Daniel's, you know, violating this, that, and the other, and they can't find anything. And so they convince, they clearly knew that Daniel was going to be obedient to his God in prayer. And so they go to the king and they say, we want to make a decree here. We you know what, king, you know, such flattery. I mean, such political flattery here that's just sickening. I was like, oh, king, you know what? You are just incredible. And you know what we ought to do for you, king? Since you're so great and incredible and we just admire you so much, you know what we should do? We should make a decree, like a little temporary law, that for 30 days, nobody can ask any, cannot petition any other king or god except you. And the king was like, well, that's mighty nice of you. Now, he wasn't really into it. You'll see that here in a little bit. Well, that's mighty nice of y'all. If y'all want to honor me that way, and we'll put this little decree in, and it'll all go out, and everybody will be like, what a great king. We'll do that. And so he signs this decree. Well, they had a law that once you signed a decree, it could not be reversed. So the conspiracy and the scandal has got some steam now. And it says, now when Daniel, Daniel was not a coward. When Daniel knew, he knew it. He knew the decree. He knew all of this. Because the decree said that if you do petition any other king or god, then you're going to be thrown into a lion's den. And it says, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened, he knew the writing was signed. He had his windows open in his chamber, and it says he kneeled upon his knees 3 times and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? You know, you got to be careful about politicians. They'll tell you whatever they want to tell you, but there's almost always a secret motive. And it says, the king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. He was upset with himself that I cannot believe I let these lying, manipulating politicians deceive me. And it says, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. He was trying to find a way. I got to find a way out of this. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. So for the rest of the day, he is petitioning and begging and trying to find a loophole so this won't happen to Daniel, who he loved and who he favored and who was over all of his realm. Then the men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed. And they got him. Their plan worked. We've tricked the king. We've got Daniel on a charge that the law says cannot be reversed. Even the king himself labored all the rest of the day and could not find a loophole. Daniel is a doomed man. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Now this king knows something. This king knows when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. Number one, a lion is not your friend. A lion is your enemy. If you go out into the plains of Africa and you're walking through that sawgrass out there and there's a lion looking at you and creeping up on you, he is not coming to cuddle you. He's coming to eat you. You are the prey. And it says, and a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Look, Daniel was at more peace in that lion's den than the king was in his own chamber, because Daniel's ways pleased the Lord, and the king's ways did not. The Lord was with Daniel. And if you remember, a month or two ago, I preached on angels and the Lord dispatching those angels when his people are in time of need. Well, there comes a time when, in a way that I can only imagine, that the Lord calls an angel to his side and dispatches him and says, one of my children who is faithful and whose ways please me has been the victim of conspiracy and hate and jealousy, and he's fixing to be thrown into a den of lions. I want you to go down there and sit with him and shut the mouth of those lions. And it says, then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste into the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths and they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. I don't have time to go through it, but I want you to think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I ought to call them by their other names, right? We've always called them those three. That's their Babylonian names. When you got Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, okay, they stood before Nebuchadnezzar, refused to bow to him, and when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies be at peace with him. In a way only God can do, he delivers them from the fire, and the next thing you know, Nebuchadnezzar does not hate them. Nebuchadnezzar is honoring them. King Darius goes to, he honors Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar, when Daniel would not eat at the king's meat, and he came out and he was doing it the Lord's way the whole time, Nebuchadnezzar honored him. All these men that should have hated God's people found themselves at peace with them. So in conclusion, it's comforting to me to know that if we are going down a path for our nation that leads to Babylon, that in the midst of Babylon, for those that remain faithful and don't compromise the things of the Lord and leave their windows open for the world to see that I am one of his and I obey him above and beyond all things, that in the midst of all that nation, of all of that, and in that type of nation, that God can promote and bring peace to his people even in the midst of that situation. That's very comforting to me, because we're probably headed there some one of these days. If we find ourselves there, especially I say for some of you young people here that maybe are in the college, you're kind of in Nebuchadnezzar's court trying to be indoctrinated. Stand strong and be brave, because there's a time coming when the very thing that may help deliver you is the Lord looking at you and recognizing your past obedience and walk with him. So don't ever hesitate to leave those windows open for the Lord. And I hope that that's been encouraging to you. If the times of Babylon come, that in the midst of that, the Lord can still promote and deliver his people.